Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 184, featuring some good friends of you, Lon. Who was on the podcast this episode?
Yeah, we had Evan Buxton and Brian Holmes, both in town from Neoscape.
Yeah.
They flew in from Boston, so we took the opportunity to sit down and have a chat.
Yeah, it's funny because I usually get to have some of my old co-workers on the podcast, but looks like you got to have yours this time.
Yeah, a little trip down memory lane, and those guys are doing some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
So it was good to catch up.
They're an extremely important ArcVis company. I think that during that time when suddenly ArcVis took a different turn and started to become much more high production, they were one of the companies that sort of led that charge back in the day, right?
Yeah, and I think you know how we always go back to that that SIGGRAPH in San Diego in 2007,
yep,
right?
That's when I first met you.
Where we were chatting, you know, at the time is when ArcVis had kind of really come on the scene to do full-fledged sort of music video production,
mm-hmm.
You know, starting to use green screen and a lot of other things. And I remember chatting going like, wow, wait, you guys are doing a full creative, you know, suite of things. This is really cool.
Right.
And, you know, that was one turning point. And of course it's just built from there, right? Like, you
right.
know, now you're getting helicopters involved and drone footage
and a lot of VR
tracking VR. Yeah.
Yeah. And we talk a lot about VR in this, in a very different context than we have in the past. We draw many, many, many parallels to the gaming industry. And in fact, we end up talking about games for a long time in this podcast, because I think that it's an extremely important medium to look at in terms of how do you communicate things in VR. So it was a really good one. In terms of announcements, last week Melissa went through a long rundown of our SIGGRAPH.
We got a big list at SIGGRAPH. It's going to be an amazing 2 days of V-Ray days.
Yeah.
Huge blockbusters. You know, if it was a Marvel movie that released, there's going to be some kind of breakdown of it.
Right.
We've also got Jurassic World from ILM, whole bunch of stuff. And then of course, Vlado is going to have his latest Vlado in Renderland, which should be pretty amazing.
Pretty epic. I would highly recommend that you go to the Vlado talk. All the other talks are going to be amazing, but in terms of, if you want to know some real news about the future of V-Ray and where we're going, I would highly recommend you go to the Vlado talk, which I believe is on the Wednesday
from Wednesday, 2 to 3.
Wednesday to 2 to 3.
Yeah.
So
how I remember that, I'm not quite sure, but
well, it's gonna
visual
be a big,
memory.
It's going to be a big, big talk. So.
Yeah. I wish we could, you know, I wish we could record it for anybody that's not going to be there. The problem always is that it's very tough to get the permissions to show all the footage and everything. It's hard enough to get it to show behind closed doors, but,
right. Yeah, but it's gonna be a really good SIGGRAPH, and we'd love to know from you guys, the listeners, if you know what you guys think, if you guys are gonna attend. I'm gonna be there in full force doing some podcasting. So if you know of someone that you want to be on the podcast, let me know in the comment section, or just email us labs@chaosgroup.com and let us know, and I will. I've got my new mobile podcasting gear. It's going to be much easier for me to just do podcasts on the fly. So I would love to do that. And I think that's about it. That's all we got for now. But this is awesome. Good to talk to your friends at Neoscape. Really fun people. This is a really hilarious podcast, by the way.
Yeah, some funny stories.
Some good stories. All right. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fernell.
So we're drinking some fine red Bulgarian red wine. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
So good to see you.
Thanks for having us.
You too. Thank you.
Oh, let's reach. Here we go.
Yep.
So Lon and I met 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. 2 weeks and 20 years ago.
It could be argued that we hit it off. Am I? No, your face says no. Okay, mean, let's start over.
But his body says yes.
His body always says yes. Let's not talk about high school, please. You're the host.
No. I'm a mediator.
Ah, that's a better word.
So seriously, one of the first interactions that Evan and I had, Los many years ago, was first of all.
You don't have to do that, by the way. You can just let it go. There you go.
One of the funniest people I've ever met in my entire life. We're in the car. Evan tells a joke about Lost in Space or something.
I don't remember.
And was doing the Danger Will Robinson thing. I proceeded to say, you know what would make that joke funnier, Evan, is if you put your arms in your shirt and you were doing Danger Will Robinson. And we both came up with this thing where we just like opened up the car door and rolled out onto the highway. Yeah, because...
Classic moment of having to be there.
Yeah.
Something that does not work well in the podcast.
This translates really well for our Egyptian people that are listening right now.
Check the show links. I know you do that. We'll link to the whiteboard.
The whiteboard? Yeah. Good idea.
It's a good one. The first time that I met Lon...
Careful.
...was... SIGGRAPH 2007.
Yeah. San Diego.
San Diego, the infamous one, and you were working for Neoscape at the time.
That's right. With these guys.
So your part of your legacy and your was going through Neoscape.
My upbringing?
Your upbringing.
Yeah. So Evan and I actually started at Neoscape 2 weeks apart.
2 weeks apart.
Right?
Yep.
So that's where the 2 weeks comes from.
Correct.
2 weeks.
I was employee. You were six, I think, and I was seven, yeah. I think.
Okay. And what were your roles?
We didn't know what we
were doing. You guys are just like, let's just do something.
Evan had a nickname at that point.
I had a few, but
yeah.
I just wanted to work at Neoscape. I had gone to sign painting school. And learned how to sign paint, did that for 5 years. I still love signs even today, especially carved ones, gold leaf, all that. But then I did that for 5 years and realized, in my opinion, because the art is still there, you can only write for sale so many times. And I wasn't learning anything else. I felt like I've done that, you know? So I've always been impressed with special effects. And so I bought this really, at the time, affordable 3D program.
TrueSpace.
Raydream 3D.
Raydream
3D. I think, yeah. And I did some really bad 3D, including a South Park takeoff.
The roller coaster,
yep. Yeah. But then I saw an ad for Neoscape. I've been looking and just hounded Rob McLeod, you know, president of Neoscape, to get an interview. And went in for the interview. And he said, basically, come down right now. Finally, just stop calling. Come in. So I went in and stayed for about 8 hours because Rob and I just hit it off immediately. Still a very good friend of mine. And yeah. And then I said, I'll do whatever it takes to work here. I can't do what you guys are doing yet. But this, I could just tell my opinion at the time. It turned out to be all right. What a cool place. Like, you guys are doing really cool stuff. That he was showing me some stuff they were doing at the time with, what was that program? Was it Lightwave?
Lightscape. Yep.
I had no access to Lightscape, so blown away by that stuff. Anyway, so I said, I'll do whatever it takes. So I was they called me FMG, fucking new guy, for a while. Magellan, because no sense of direction.
That was the nickname I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Quite
a few.
Get lost Fang in Central Square.
For FNG, yeah. Yep. And I did anything that I could to be helpful. They were busy creating the art, and I didn't really know how to do the art yet. So I set up the first like FedEx account because... they were mailing prints off to architects, and it was a big, like, how do we? And I'm like, guys, just make an account. Like, this is, let me.
That sounds accurate. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Do we go to the post
Brian's
office?
Laughing, like,
all
yep,
need to go
I
to the post
that.
Office, or maybe just exactly. One person go to the post office?
How much are we spending on printing? You guys don't know that? Don't you have like it all listed out in Excel sheets and all that? So I brought a level of slight organization just to, there wasn't chaos by any stretch. They were doing great work. But since I couldn't do what they were doing at the time, I helped in other ways.
Right.
And then we started to get really, of course, Lon came on, and along with some of the other artists we had, and of course the ownership, we started elevating the art and what we were trying to do. And the guys are always we'd have internal discussions, you remember, about not doing walkthroughs.
Yes.
Early on, you know, and Lon basically, along with others, but led by Lon, was like, we're not doing it. And here's how we're going to work with clients.
Here's why it's a bad idea.
To get them to understand, you know, like.
Well, we've had this discussion before.
Yeah, okay, so we can skip ahead 5 years.
Well, no, we've had this discussion before. It was specifically about like, when I was in architecture school and we had access to 3D programs or whatever, the person was like, I'm going to do a walkthrough. And people were teaching other people to do was make a spline, walk through the space, attach the camera to the spline, and make it run for 1,000 frames.
6 minutes.
Yeah. It's insane.
It was insane.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I was like the architects when I started. I'm like, this is amazing. Let's do 8 minutes, you know. And I learned a lot from everyone at Neoscape. So anyway, we Lon and I hit it off right away. For whatever reason. I don't like to talk about those dark times. And
yeah, very dark times.
Yeah, but things started to change right away. And we started to get bigger projects.
And this is after Lon left, finally.
Exactly right. I started taking it seriously. We started getting bigger projects, and I started to manage the projects as opposed to doing the work. Uh-huh. Again, I think there's just like somewhat of a natural organization.
Was the first big one the NYC 2012?
I was just talking about this. Was it that or was it the artery? Did the artery?
Artery
come?
Came after 2012.
Okay, so I remember.
No, it was definitely.
Well, before you guys go too far ahead,
okay.
We got a couple things we need to do. Let's establish for my audience a little bit what Neoscape is, where it was started, what's its idea, or I mean, what is if okay? You're the guy who goes into meetings, right?
Yep.
And you got to say, all right, we're Neoscape. We are.
Bang.
Bang. Okay, what is that bang?
Creative agency.
We're creative.
We do everything and anything you would need to do to market a real estate project.
A real estate project. That's the more specific thing.
And, you know, we have 10% of our client base outside of the real estate market, but for the most part, we are, a real estate creative agency.
That's your expertise.
Exactly.
Right. And so the trend that we've been discussing is that in the old days, back when I was doing ArcViz, there was no such companies as Neoscape that much, right? It was like, it was the nerd in the architecture office that was doing stuff, right? And that was me, usually. So this creative agency that's coming up with ideas, one of the things that seemed interesting was the shift from the visualization happening for the architect from the architect to the customer, but direct bypassing the entire architect and going directly to the customer.
Correct.
So when did that start to happen?
That really started right when I came on. I mean, that was about 13, 14 years ago.
We
realized that the architects, although they love this stuff, they're not financing, you know, the marketing materials for the developer.
Okay.
And the developer is who's actually paying for this type of service.
They have more money.
Right. And so it made a lot.
Yeah. And the budgets are separate.
Right.
They should be.
It made a lot more sense for us to go after the developer.
Right.
The money owner, someone who's trying to lease, you know, whether it's retail, office, residential space, than to actually try to get an architect to pay for these services.
They also have two different needs. And
right.
We much prefer the developer's needs as far as what an architect's looking for, like the material better be exactly what it needs to be,
right.
Which has value. It needs to look real. But then,
right.
You know, there's a marketing side of it. We want to make a beautiful piece and tell a story. And the architect can have a slightly different story than what the developer is trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we were leaning in that direction of wanting to tell that story versus just the walkthrough or, you know, what would the glass look like?
Now, in the early days, as I'm sure you guys can attest to, there must have been some conflicts between what the ArcViz companies were visualizing versus what the actually architects were seeing. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
There still is.
There still is.
There still is.
But has over time, has that sort of people come to accept that a little bit more, or?
I think it's not necessarily what the studio, like us, what we're producing and
right.
What the difference is. It's what our clients are asking for,
mm-hmm.
Which may be different or maybe a little bit further along than what the architect is ready to deliver at that time, if that makes sense.
That happens a lot, yeah.
So, you know, you have a dream, you have, you know, a vision of something that's going to happen, but a guy that owns the space needs to be out leasing that, you know, yesterday.
Right.
And so it's a constant battle between waiting for design, waiting for a concept, and having someone like us just make something that looks credible, right? So
right.
There can be a balance there, and depending on what architect and design firm you're working with,
right?
They sometimes will let you get away with a little bit more than others will.
Yeah.
Especially if they're just, not just, but if they're raising capital to build it, then they certainly need someone like us, because the architect has a lot of work to do.
But doesn't that also force really the architect into a corner at some point?
Well, are problems that come into play when you come up with a...
That's like me making a trailer to a movie, and you're like, well, now
we're going to make that movie.
We're going to make that movie.
It happens.
You know what I mean?
Totally happens.
That's what happened with Deadpool. Right? They made the trailer.
Yes.
Or a scene. They made a scene.
They made a test.
I don't know. What are you talking about?
There's some story behind her. But yes, they made the test, and then the test leaked.
Yeah.
And then the leaked test became the story. The problem was, well, actually, it's interesting. I don't know if there's any parallels behind this. The problem was, when they first made the test, Marvel, or not even Marvel, I don't know who it was, but Fox, I think it was Fox, they were not ready to make that move, to do that, because I said, no one's ever going to watch an R-rated superhero.
Yeah, nothing adult, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So suddenly when it leaked and everyone was like, I want that, they were like, oh.
Everyone wants to watch an R-rated.
Yeah, and then that's what happened. Now, there was a lot of time between when that test happened and when the leak happened, so maybe the audience had matured enough during that time.
But there are some parallels to that, believe it or not.
That's why I was going.
Yeah, I interrupted, but I think it's worth it. Jump in if it's not.
I think you should go.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to interrupt you now, though.
That's rude. We created some films that were not against clients' wishes necessarily, but we ended up going our own way. They told us what they wanted.
They weren't exactly what they asked for.
Exactly. Either. And once we had built up a few of those, then it was like, oh, I need that. We were trying to tell them what they needed.
Right.
But you had to show it to them. And so we had to take some liberties with some existing projects. Instead of doing some examples of what might be possible, we would experiment with the client, you know, at real time. And we create, would you consider, I'm asking Lon this, Law 5 to be
totally
one of those?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was Rodrigo, right?
Yeah.
But isn't that true of almost every creative field?
Josh Precisen?
Yeah.
Every creative field, with customers says, I want something like this. And like, yeah, but what about
But there was a maturity we had as a company, mm-hmm. and I'll even go so far as to say as an industry at the time,
yeah.
that we had to get more comfortable in our own skin
totally.
Of like what we could deliver. And if we thought we were right. But you know, we hadn't done it. And so then we did it and everyone said, you know, this is okay. I do want that. And then it changed for us.
And honestly, I feel like you can draw a lot of a parallel between what was happening in the sort of early visualization days to now. You had to get over the technical hurdles to figure out what was possible. What could you do? What was actually something you could deliver to now? How do I take that to the next level and turn it into something amazing and creative? And we're almost back at the same drawing board with AR and VR and stuff now, where we're going, let's figure out as fast as possible what's technically possible and then raise the bar from there.
Almost backfill in a way.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Which doesn't just, you know, an injustice to it, but yeah, I hear you.
It goes back a little bit to the conversation that we just had about who our client-based switched to, because we are selling a lot. Well, a majority of our clients do not have a creative background. Right, they're a real estate developer, mm-hmm. they're a property owner, they're an investment fellow mm-hmm. who's trying to lease and sell real estate. So he or she does not understand, you know, a creative process. They don't necessarily have this creative vision, and they come to us looking for that, but they don't know how long things take. They don't understand, you know, to Lon's point, the possibility of, you know, what is possible. You know, here's a story I want to tell. I don't know how to get there, but I need it yesterday, and I don't think it should cost too much because it's not all on the computer now.
But they must have – I know. But they must have some vision.
They do – well
– because, like, they have to have at least some kind of a master plan in their head or something. You know what I mean? Like, they're going, it's like, I just bought a bunch of swampland. I don't know. Turn it into something.
No, amusement park. Yeah.
You know? They don't do that. They have, like, I bought this land because I envisioned something here.
Correct.
And sure, maybe they can describe it verbally or something, but.
But that's like the surface, because that's more likely like every other project. So we have to, working with them and the internal creative team, dig down to, okay, what's different and interesting about this?
Right.
As opposed to the way you were describing it pretty accurately at like the high level. Sure, it's a great location on the water. So is there's a lot of water. There's a lot of great locations. What's different about it? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be a struggle to find out what's different. But then we have Lon Grows Wine to help. Is it a Merlot?
This just said fine dry red wine from Bulgaria. So I'm not sure.
It's best when they don't tell you what it is. It's absolutely right.
That's a blend.
Blended wine.
Well, Bordeaux is almost
some of the finest blends in the world, no doubt about it. But yeah, sometimes it can be not a struggle. That's what, kind of fun. When I was doing signs, there wasn't a puzzle. And I think what we do, the reason I'm still here after 18 years is it's always a puzzle. And a for sale sign, no puzzle. I know the answer. But for this, it's like, okay, I don't do a lot of the high level creative work that, you know, the creative team does. They bring me in when necessary, but mostly it's a whole other team. But my point is, it's very interesting to try to figure out what makes it unique and how to tell a compelling story, which I know is boilerplate, bullet point garbage, but it's the most fun.
I am very excited you're talking about this, and I'm going to explain why. I think story is something that is massively lacking right now in terms of there is enormous amount of people with very, very good skill sets, right? Lots of great sign painters. To put it in your perspective, right? People who can really do beautiful, beautiful concept art, beautiful, beautiful pictures, portraits of characters, etc. What's lacking is that it's a one image thing. There's no story, right? And there's no narrative behind that story. So the idea of coming up with a story, that is what's great about the creative process. That allows it to be unique every time, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you feel like your stories are like your signs, where it's the same story every time. Is it? I mean, I don't know. Do you feel like
at the highest level?
By 18 years from now, I'm sure you've got a lot of same stories.
There are times when
absolutely it is.
You go back to the same well.
You're selling a building.
Yeah.
If you think of it that way, but
and
that's
you do the
very
whole story where the man shows up in a day and
ooh, that's an interesting angle.
A day in the life of a building.
Hold on, can we pause? Write that down. The next 20 years of
that's every meeting we walk into.
Yeah,
here's what we're thinking. Right. Someone comes in, you know,
and
they park here.
They think they've had a great idea,
and the sun goes down, and the wine glasses clink, and
Or the other one is you have two stories, two different people, a man and a woman.
Right.
Two different
and they
condos.
Meet and they fall in love and then they become, you know.
And then they buy a bigger condo.
Buy a bigger condo and then they become empty nesters and they get a smaller condo. And
one of the nice challenges is when they, we've had a few projects like this recently where the client has embraced the mystery, and I'll relate it to trailers. It's hard to tell sometimes a story in a minute.
Sure.
And it's a big master plan, you know, but sometimes we're tasked with that. But like trailers nowadays, just give it all up. The entire plot, the twist, it's all there.
Yeah.
Usually trailer four. They're like, just come see our movie. Like, here's everything. But some of our
it's
clients.
It's Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Just that's see more, it.
Out there, people listening, ignore the third and fourth trailer. It's always the entire movie. But some of our clients have embraced the mystery, and they don't want to give it all away.
Right.
So that's also interesting because you have to allure and compel and get people to want to reach out, pick up the phone, website, whatever they're using. Carrier pigeon and get them to come to the marketing center where sometimes the entire experience has completely changed. Now the film is another minute longer because we 30-second teaser just get people excited about it. And that's always different too, because it used to be put them on the glass, you know, when we started out, show me everything. And now we're getting a few clients that are more mysterious. And sometimes it hasn't worked out and they've come back to us and said it's too mysterious. Nobody knows what we're doing and where we're located. Then we start over.
What is one of the most unusual stories that you've told about a piece of real estate?
Do you remember the, was it Mars Next?
Yep.
That Mars was unusual. Next.
Actually, now that we're in this world of VR,
yeah.
I think like, man, Mars Next was just
that would
he
been
was ahead
cool.
of his time.
It was before his time.
Yeah,
it was totally before his time.
We couldn't accomplish what he was looking for.
Yeah.
You know? So, a guy wanted to sell real estate on the Mars, sorry.
On Mars, yeah.
Yeah, and it was
virtual condominiums that cost you 19 zonars per month.
A square hectare?
Which is basically $20. You know, the exchange rate was pretty one-to-one.
It's no different than buying, like, a star for your loved one. Like, you name a star,
totally.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this was a subscription to a star.
He was a subscription model?
Yeah, no, it was... You paid
he
it for monthly.
Way ahead
yeah.
Of time.
Yeah, totally way ahead.
This wow. is this is basically like Fortnite.
Well, kind of. It's yeah, kind of like the same
you're
idea.
Buying, you're buying
it's more like
virtual crap.
Second Life. It's a lot exactly. It was a lot like Second Life yep. before it came out.
Without any sponsors.
But and the
but what
I
would
think,
you get for it?
I think the
pictures, renderings?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is
beautiful
you,
renderings.
You had a QTV you had a QTVR, a QTVR tour, right? Which you we were just talking about this not long ago, that oh, plugin yeah. that allows you to do a QTVR along a path. Mm-hmm. Which has now come back because now it's VR.
Mm-hmm.
And that plugin went away for a while, but it was pretty amazing
oh,
at
like
the time
the
because
Matterport
it was animated.
Stuff?
Yeah. It's like an animated QTVR.
Sure.
I think the big problem with it, one, the fact that it was too early and people's kind of, you know, weren't ready for it.
There were other problems as well.
There was no community. There wasn't like, no. you know, you were just there in this thing yourself. You didn't have a community of people to talk to. Maybe there was an IRC chat or something like that.
It was nascent
that.
Web. Yeah. There was nothing.
But it was cool.
It was cool.
It was a cool project. And I remember actually Buzz designing some of that stuff.
Buzz
that was
did
one
some
of the,
great work.
That was one of the first times where it's like, well, here's some concept art.
Yeah.
That go
come
with
to
it,
life.
Right? You
yeah.
know?
It was undeniably cool, but we were all thinking, man, what is up? What is going on?
What is happening?
What is it? But, you know, again, hindsight being what it is, it's like, man, he was onto something.
Yeah.
Because people buy digital goods all the time now. They don't even blink an eye. You buy a skin for your character, which none of it exists. Mm-hmm. As soon as the new console comes out, it's gone. It's, you know, we stream our music like the old days on radio, but we pay for the right. It's totally, I don't want to say upside down, but repackaging the same old stuff, but charging us in a new way.
Now, yeah. That's where the Fortnite thing makes perfect sense, right? Because now Fortnite, you're buying $8 dance moves,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, you're buying this piece of digital experience to add to your second life, right? Your
right.
alternate ego.
I mean, it's no different than, like, the shirt I'm wearing, the shirt you're wearing, right? We buy stuff that we like. So I get it. I also still think it's strange. But
that it's the difference being
yeah,
that one
yeah.
is.
But I also
yeah.
get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you were one of the first people that I ever met that talked about like the convergence of games. Right. I mean, I think from day one that we met, you talked about, yeah, this is all going to be one thing. And the light bulb goes off and you go, yeah, yeah, it is. It is all
right.
going to be one thing.
The first time I saw at the time. The best thing I'd ever seen. So again, at the time, because everyone's like, oh, what's he going to say? But it was, I'm a big Nintendo guy, which has never really led anything graphically, but Super Mario 64.
Was maybe it, yeah.
That was a cartoon,
that
man.
Was awesome.
Cartoon come to life. The PlayStation stuff looked nice. They had some warping problems and all that, but I said, okay, this is just going to get better. Who knows how far, you know, where we are now, but I knew that everything we create will be what we do will be digital, and there'll be a much wider marketplace for what Neoscape does. The talent that we're trying to get was very specific and siloed back in the day, like people like Lon and Carlos Rodrigo. Carlos and Rodrigo still being at Neoscape. But now we're competing with companies that have no business hiring 3D artists, you know, five years ago. Yeah, like why is Facebook hiring? But, you know, like Snapchat, all these people that we're now competing with to get 3D artists, which we were not before, as far as like if you were into architecture and building 3D models, you would come to a company like ours for a period of time, other than going to Hollywood, which again is its own thing. Yep.
So let's jump into that. So there is now a market for virtual worlds.
Yeah, virtual goods. Yeah,
virtual goods, but also virtual worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys know a lot about making virtual worlds. Mainly because you're building it before it's built, right?
Well, that's what Neoscape means.
Right? Yeah, the new...
new world.
New world, right?
New landscape.
New landscape. So VR, what's cool about VR is that a lot of people seem to be shoehorning VR as like an evolution of 3D film, which is where I want to just go, no! It's wrong. It's not that. It's about taking you to a place that's not there yet, right? You're taking you to a new place, or a place you haven't experienced, or something like that, where it's about transporting you to new locations. That's not different than what you guys are doing, right? So VR to you guys is completely natural.
Yeah, it's a language you already speak.
100%.
Right? It's another tool in the toolkit.
Yep.
We go into every meeting nowadays, and it's like, we want VR. It's like, well, hold, pump the brakes. Let's talk about your project and the problem in your story that we'd like to help you solve.
Right.
Does it require VR? Maybe right. not.
And it's the same, it's the same conundrum you ran into it with
sometimes. It's a very useful tool.
But you see, that's the thing that I think is good, because you guys understand that. A lot of times in the film industry, they're like, okay, we made The Incredibles, the movie. Now we're going to make Incredibles in stereo, because apparently, you know, the Asian market and the Russians love 3D. So we're going to do that to cover that market. And then we're just going to throw in some VR stuff in there, just because, you know, that's the next thing. It's like, is it? No, it's not. Because you guys understand what the VR experience is about. The VR experience is about transporting you to a place, or seeing or understanding something from a first-person experience. And you guys understand that. You guys, that's what you do, right?
And that's not exactly how people sell and buy real estate, right?
Right.
So it's still a very personal experience.
And so right.
What we have found is, you know, when you're creating a marketing center experience, and you're putting, you know, four people in a room that are all decision makers on moving, you know, my company, you know, to a different state, to a different, you know, part of the city, into sure. this new building, and I suddenly have someone that puts goggles on their head, they're completely removed from the room,
right.
you know, facial expressions, what's everyone else seeing and thinking, yeah. right? And so, you know, it has to be unique. There has got to be something that's really kind of the killer spot, you know, the killer image that's going to maybe put a close on a sale to right. get someone there.
Yeah, but
okay. And you may even need to lead them there, right? And
absolutely.
So like you said, you can't just go, here's your new building, clunk, you know, no. put that on their head. It's like, where am I? I don't understand. You have to give them an entire third-person experience
story.
First,
right.
a story, and then allow them to experience right. that in person.
We talk a lot about, you know, something that's in real time, and, you know, we would still like to control that experience and story. So maybe making something a choose your own adventure rather than, hey, put this on and go wherever you want, right? Because mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily help anyone. It's more, it's you're selling a story, you're selling a brand, mm-hmm. you're selling an image, and so you have to control that story and image. So we try to educate our clients on controlling that as much as possible.
Okay.
The struggle, though, is that struggle is real. The struggle is real. People obviously don't want to be controlled. So how do you make it so that they don't feel like they're being controlled? Just like government's doing to us now.
Right.
Make it so that you don't feel like you're being controlled. With VR, you can look anywhere you want. And for a lot of our projects, that's not what you want.
Okay,
there's a
hold
building
on, hold
going
on.
Up next door that construction or
no well hold
it,
on
it can be problematic,
because this problem has been something that the video game industry has been looking at for years.
Yeah, but
and
nobody
years.
Wants fog,
huh?
Nobody wants fog on the other side of the
level of detail. Just
exactly. Yeah,
well,
can't look
no,
over there.
I mean, they make a narrative that basically is very linear, right? You do end up going on rails. And My two examples of two games that I really like to play that are completely different. One, obviously, is Skyrim, which is like you can do whatever the hell you want, right?
Yeah.
If you want to cultivate a bunch of potatoes and fill up a room full of potatoes, you can do that. No problem. But then the other one is BioShock Infinite that mm-hmm. I also thought was incredible. And that one is very linear storytelling. But the story was so good that you were like, I can't wait to experience it. In fact, the game part of it to me was distracting. I almost wished there was a version of it where I can just walk through the whole story because well and still be able to see and interact and stuff, because it was really well done.
Yeah, I mean, to Evan's point though, I think the challenge is that there's pragmatism that has to come into play, right? So if I am giving somebody a virtual experience of a high rise or a condominium or something that I want them to see, they're going to go, what's my kitchen look like? What's my bathroom look like? What's my view look like? they have a prescribed notion of what are my amenities?
Yeah. What am I close to?
And you can't go like, well, follow the, you know, the pigeons, the John Boo pigeons over here, and like, look at that, there's fireworks and it's 4th of July. You know, they're like, I don't care. I want to see my bathroom. There's a certain amount of pragmatism that comes into play when it's that kind of project. The other thing, just for the sake of conversation, right? Because I think oftentimes we talk about the creative for living spaces, because that's a very common experience, one that we can all relate to, because we've probably at sometimes in our lives we've seen a sales center or whatever. But there's a totally different story when you're trying to pitch a donor on helping out with, you know, the Presbyterian Hospital or the some university, and you're trying to get people that's their alma mater and so on. There's a whole, that's a completely different story that's not related to that. And so it has to do with the audience, what their unanswered questions are, what their natural questions are, their tendencies are. You have to remove those off the table. You can't just put them into a blank canvas and say like, here right. you go. This is,
I mean, that's more of an emotional play.
Yeah.
You know, they don't need to check. They're not checking boxes. That's I want to be a part of this. Right. And so those are fun projects, I think, because they allow our team to get very creative in telling that story. Right. So
yeah. One thing too, that has been interesting is we started to do VR 18 months ago. VR has been around obviously longer than 18 months when they announced the first to DK1, the Oculus.
Yep.
But we,
5 years.
5 years?
Wow, times. 6 years.
Really?
Yeah.
So then 18 months is totally incorrect. Doesn't, anyway,
yeah.
The time doesn't really matter. But I remember one of our first VRs we did for, if you want to call it a walkthrough. And it was all, you know, teleportation based. And there was a story. And you basically had to go all the way through. And almost immediately the clients were like,
kind of like It's a Small World after all.
Just get me there.
Right.
And it was like, oh, so again, they know they can go anywhere. So it's like, don't make me go through this. I was like, okay. So then I had to start building in the team shortcuts for the presenter.
Hyper jump.
Oh yeah, you're upset. 3, you're instantly in the bedroom because you don't have any time for any story. Just mm-hmm. get me there. I know this is not a linear story. I know this is a video game. Just get me where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And that was surprising. I thought the story would be compelling enough since you're in, you can sense the scale of the space and look out the
windows.
Well,
once you've
and
walked
see.
Through it once, right?
So, but this was the first time. Like, they literally just had the headset on. It was like, oh, follow the glowing arrows. It's like, just get me to the master bedroom. Okay.
That goes back to Lon's point of, you know, a lot of what we're doing is we're selling a vision, but the person on the other end, whether it's if it's a home, you know, a B2C story, or whether it's, you know, an office, a B2B story, there's still the person that's going to say, what am I getting?
Right.
You know, how... There's still
it's gotta be that, pretty explicit.
I need to know the square footage.
Like the John Woo.
I need
like,
to know, you know, who's around me for amenities. I need my employees. This is gonna work for my employee base, right? So right. I need that story other than this really cool, you know, conceptual video game you've just put me into.
And nothing's more frustrating when you've got a broker or a salesperson that's talking with somebody and they go, this is great. I'm ready to buy. Show me what my bedroom looks like. And you go, well, hold on a second. Let me just take you through the, exactly. You know, the story.
We're not there yet. Hold on.
You know, like bump you're about brakes. To meet your significant other
the brakes.
And you guys are going to go, we're going to go on a yacht for a little while because
they'll be trying to force it though, man. We're like, oh, this is what people want. No.
But do people do that? Like, think about it this way, right? When you're watching if you did a, you know, 2-3 minute video, people wouldn't say, just skip ahead. They wouldn't necessarily, they'll give the 3 minutes to go through that experience, right? So what?
But it's a different environment. It's a different experience, right? It's not something that you're just consuming, say, on Netflix or whatever. A lot of times these are happening one-on-one, in a meeting, in a conversation, in a sales center.
I know, but they still used to show the 3-minute videos,
but
and they wouldn't interrupt
the video.
You're
controlling the eyeballs in a 3-minute video.
That's exactly
what
I'm getting
at. Jump cuts. I know exactly what leads to the next thing.
Yeah.
In VR, I might be looking to my left out the windows, and I jump cut to the terrace. I'm like, how the hell did I get to, like, what just happened? And or maybe there was
actually ways to do that.
Someone opened a door for me and it's like, oh, that's your 24/7 concierge. Well, I didn't see him. I was looking over here.
Yeah.
Sure, this is some of the fun problems we have to figure out, and others, we're trying to work on that.
Right.
But they're totally different, which right. I think what we're all saying. Like that 3-minute
film.
If
you
know
how to make a film, there's, you know, what, hundreds of year history on how to
yeah.
how to tell a story through filmmaking. The VR story and how to do that is just mentioned it's 5 years old, right? So people are still figuring out.
Well, yeah, but you know what? The video game industry isn't, right? So let's talk about your concierge moment, right? How do you solve that in a game? The game thing is if you're not looking there, the concierge is not going to open the door. But when you do look there, then the concierge is going to open the door. That makes it feel like you've interacted with the concierge, right? So you wait for those moments to happen. That's what happened in BioShock Infinite, right? That's you don't do – nothing happens until you're at the right place at the right time, and then the story can continue. And that's the way it works. That's what makes it feel personal, is because it's your action of being there has enabled that to happen. The video game industry has done that, right? There are now video games out there that are unbelievably powerful narrative films that are actually shocking people, like Last of Us is
– outstanding game.
You know, and the new Last of Us 2 is incredible.
Right? God of War is incredible.
Yeah, well. And so these are real stories that are compelling that happen through your actions.
Yes, although again, the camera's being controlled
to some extent. Yeah, because
to a great extent.
But it used to be a lot of cutscenes and stuff.
Sure,
like that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the trigger points to you can connect a trigger or a collider to your gaze or your HMD. So that if you finally get to where I want you to go, again, I take over, if you will, and the concierge does his job.
Right.
But you may never get there.
Right.
With a video game, generally, you're like, well, what do I do next? Someone might just be – which
that is usually the most frustrating parts of video games is like I'm missing
the
next trigger point.
What do I do now? Right. Which, again, if we build the triggers in for them, meaning like the keyboard controls or the person sharing the space, that's where we're trying to get to, right, is getting everyone in the same place so that they can guide you. Which also somewhat breaks the point.
Right.
But we want to be helpful as well. So.
But you're saying about putting a second avatar in there.
However many it takes. Was it AU a couple of years ago? Was that 2 years ago?
Yep.
I think it was the Lenovo booth. They had a great product. I'm forgetting their names. WorldViz, maybe. Anyway, it was like Intel and Lenovo and a bunch of I can't remember who it was. And they had this system where you could have really any VR headset you could think of, the PSVR,
yep.
Gear VR, everything worked. You put these little, you know, basically ping pong balls, look like a old Chrysler emblem or whatever. And you could all be in the same space. You had your own avatar, like an Iron Man head. And it would say, you know, Evan underneath. And you could share the experience. And someone could run it from anywhere in the world. So the marketing team could stay, the sales team could stay in one city, but then connect you. And walk you through the environment.
Yeah. Get your rental car?
Yeah. They had their own engine. They weren't using any of the game engines. They had their own proprietary engine, which, you know,
the quality
still was doing a pretty good job.
The quality wasn't that great, I remember.
Oh, you did it as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember thinking that, you know, the quality was not.
But the tech, though.
Right.
And also
the concept of it.
Yeah. One last thing. They had built this, PowerPoint for creating a VR experience. So you just drag and dropped in 3D scenes. And then you could mix and match them together with cameras and animations and things. Mm-hmm. So that, again, you didn't have to be a video game programmer, you know, at C, didn't know how to do this, which is also a very cool idea. Because one of the challenges, whatever we create, is making it as usable as possible for our customer so that they can make use of it.
I think technology and quality of the visuals and the experience is important. Evan, think about 9 out of 10 meetings that we go into when we're going through our pitch, when I pull out a headset, whether it's you know Gear and Oculus, the first thing you hear around the room is half the people saying, oh, I can't do that. I can't put that on.
Yeah, I get sick.
I get motion sickness. I've seen that before. It's really cool, but, right? And so our job is, you know, sometimes trying to convince them that, well, you know, we're not saying that your entire marketing campaign should be built around a headset. However, there could be some cool moments or experiences that some people, you know, don't have the same reaction you have. Let us show you, right?
Some people still love a brochure. We do as well.
Right.
Some people would immediately grab the headset. We want to arm you with as many tools to have the widest scope on the market. You'll have the VR headsets for those that want it. You've got brochures for the traditionalists, which, again, brochures are great. Of course, websites and films will give you all that you need for probably whoever will want to consume what you're trying to put out there.
Yeah, and I mean, it dawned on me when Chris was making the analogy about video games having sort of, they have this down pat. The one thing that a video game has that you don't have is a completely willing audience, right? Oftentimes your audience, you've got to convince them to
even experience
go on and experience yeah, that yeah, they right. even want to have it, that it's something that they care about.
It's true, it's true.
And that's why they get to the point where it's like, I got 5 minutes, cut to the chase. Give me the big thing here. Give me the scoop or whatever it is. And then you'll find some people that go, well, yeah, I'm interested in the whole thing. But that's the exception, not the rule, I think, right. is like
now
the willingness of the audience is a completely different.
But there's also passive levels, right? Like there's a lot of people that are watching other people play video games, right?
So the Twitch stream for real estate?
Well, I'm not exactly, I'm actually a little bit serious about it where.
Just a little bit?
No, I'm a little serious. Okay. But imagine someone walking you, like, is like, I don't want to put the headset on. It's like, don't worry, don't put the headset on. I'll put the headset on, and you'll see it on the big screen, and I'll walk you through it. And then that becomes that, like, oh, okay. Oh, all right, I see what you're talking about. It's like, and then you'll say, okay, now I see this, and now I see that, and I see this. And it's like, do you want to try it on yourself? And then that person will be starting mm-hmm. to, you know, try it out, right? If I had this game that I was playing on the VR headset in our house, and people were like, no, I don't want to put that on. But then they saw everyone else playing, and I was like, okay, I want to put that on, you know? But it took them like an hour, some of them an hour before they were like, now this looks really fun and I want to do this, right?
Did you have the long girls on tap? What was going there?
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, but that's the thing, right? It's amount of familiarity of it, right? So I think that
generational. I mean, my son watches folks play video games. I bring the VR headset home, and he's got the thing on all night.
Right. I used to watch Evan play video games all the time. I had my own Twitch station.
That's right.
But that's the thing, right? I mean, a lot of people say, like, why would you watch someone else play video games? Like,
I was that person 2 years ago, and now I watch.
It's like, why do you watch someone else play basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
I feel like I started that early because I really was. I told Evan, I'm like, I have no desire to control the character, but I totally want to watch solve puzzles and I tell him, like, try this.
Well, Chris is making a really interesting point, even if you're only a little serious. I had that transition of why would you watch someone? My godson was telling me, hey, do you watch Twitch? He's mentioning all these names. What are you talking about? I play the game old school. but I am an adult. I still play video games, but I don't have as much time. So there are games that I'm like, I don't know if I want to put 80 hours into that because I don't have the time to do it. So I'll watch someone else play it and see all the good stuff. You know, it's almost like the trailer
of
the game.
Yeah.
Which I know makes the video game company somewhat angry because there's 60 bucks.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't. Because you know what? They make so much money off that. It's ridiculous. Like, look at Ninja. Have you heard of Ninja?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, so Fortnite was not a thing until Ninja started playing, right?
Do you think that's enough money to...
That's what changed everything.
Against the sales of the game itself?
Oh, God. There's no sales. Okay, so the game is free, first of all. So it's a completely free game. The only thing you're buying is literally like dance moves.
I thought Ninja was the Twitch streamer.
No. Ninja was the Twitch streamer. So the game is kind of popular. Yes.
No,
Ninja started to play, and then what really like broke like the internet for it is when Ninja played with Drake at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and then everyone's like, Ninja and Drake are playing Fortnite together, and then all of a sudden everyone got obsessed with it. Now that started it. But Owens, ever since then, that trickled out so that most people who are playing don't even know that that happened. But by now, the popularity went really big, and so that's.
But that's the free-to-play model. So yes, they're the skins and the cosmetics.
Yeah.
Right.
Would they make $300 million on iOS?
A month.
A month.
Yeah. But a game like I'm not a video game expert, so this will be
say last
roundly. I was going to go with Madden.
Okay.
They make, you know, $60 million the first weekend, and that's it.
And that's it, yeah.
They don't make any more. And then the game immediately is in the bin for $11
okay.
in 6 weeks. And to be frank, because of the long grows, I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, something about real estate.
I think so. Point. Yeah, I'll go back to the.
But but these guys are you are trying to sell people on real estate, right? I mean, that's one of the things you do, right? You're basically going to a guy and say, "This we haven't built the space yet because it would be too expensive to build the entire space, and hopefully someone will like it." So we're showing you what it potentially could be like, and therefore this is allowing us enough capital, you know, growth so that we can actually
certain
build this
projects are like that, yeah.
Sure.
Not all,
but I'm sure that there's some there's a lot of that yep. happens, right? Yep. Otherwise they you know there's enough that are like we need to convince you why you need to invest in this or need to build this or donate money to your school as you mentioned before or whatever it is. But that process is not dissimilar from, you know, the Fortnite scenario where like you need to play this game and we'll eventually convince you that you need to get this skin or you need to buy this.
Is the future of visualization free to play?
It is.
All the renderings are free.
Maybe. And we just get a cut of whatever you make? Sure.
Wouldn't that be the dream?
They tried that in visual effects, and they said, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they'd rather just deal with a fixed fee.
Well, there's too much risk.
There's too much risk.
And at least in the visual effects scenario, there's too much risk.
I mean, that's always the case, right?
Not enough margin.
There's always someone who's like, I'm going to figure out some weird thing. Like George Lucas. We talked about it on one of the old podcasts where George Lucas said, all right. I don't want my director's fee for the Star Wars, but I want the rights to all the toys. And he's like, okay. And they're like, oh, that was a big mistake.
It was a mistake.
Right.
Well, a one-sided mistake. It worked out fine for him.
Yeah. But they will never make that deal again. Ever. Gets that. But anyway. So VR obviously is a big proponent. I remember even talking to you. Wasn't Rodrigo. Who was it? Carlos. Three, four years ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
I was in Portugal, and he was trying to figure out a bid for a VR project, and he was asking like resolution, all these different things that were going on, and I was saying, and honestly speaking, he was asking questions when people are still trying to figure out what's this VR thing all about. He was actually asking questions like, okay, I have got a project. I got to do it in VR. What's the nuts and bolts, right? Mm-hmm. So the architecture world, especially companies like Leoscape or the real estate companies, they're like, we already know that this is where we need to be. And I've mentioned this before. Your industry is so much further ahead in terms of the practicality and the feasibility and understanding how to make VR work than any other industry. I don't know if you know that.
If you're including architects in our industry, because architects have been...
I am including architects.
Okay, good. Then I'll agree.
I am including architects. But I'm saying people who are trying to make movies in VR, I don't think they are as far ahead as architects mm-hmm. and architects people.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole point. You guys know how to like... I'm going to transform you to a place that doesn't exist yet, right? It makes sense, or doesn't exist.
Right.
And I'm going to try to get you to experience that as if you, so that when you do go there in real life, it'll look very similar.
So that you can make decisions on what is right for you, right? So
right. But I mean, you go, oh, you know what? I don't like that paint color.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're dealing a lot again with people that don't maybe have that the visual means to see that without being in that space or being in that
room
or seeing the rendering or you know immersing themselves in a full environment.
I remember seeing you talking to you know one of your competitors, but I know you guys know them well, the Steel Blue guys, and they were looking at different condos from different heights, you know, different floors on a building, and like. how much more does going up 20 floors really get me? How is it worth
right.
it?
Exactly. Like, yeah. What does it exactly get me?
What is exactly? Oh, I can see past that building.
Because there's a big difference in price. So yeah, exactly. It better be worth it.
I mean, the thing that excited me the most, well, two things, right? And I always get on my soapbox about this, which is...
And they do that, sorry, just another quick example before. They do that also for, like, box office or box...
The box seats in the stadium.
Box seats at stadium. So Gensler does a lot of stadium stuff. Yeah, and they're like... Okay, so from this seat, oh, this is a shitty seat. There's actually a pole right in the middle here.
But, you know, interesting thing about that is I've often wondered about, think of the team, right? They have 10 seats in the stadium, mm-hmm. Whatever the arena is. If they put VR cameras there, they can sell that seat to 100 million people.
Yep.
And that's now, okay, so my wife had this because she and I were discussing, like, I don't know, she's funny, but she's basically very, like, you know, negative Nancy and doubtful about stuff. She's like, I don't
does
know.
She listen to this podcast?
Yes, yes, she does. She does.
That's why she feels that way.
That's why she feels that way. Because
wait, but he went to, I love her. Like, he went down.
Yeah,
that I do. But she basically says, like, I don't understand why you would need VR, and all of her points are valid, really valid. But somehow she was introduced to exactly that, where there was a VR camera that was exactly set up on, like, you know, courtside on a basketball game.
Yeah.
And she's awesome. And she said, like,
yeah, suddenly you're in the Spike Lee seat.
Yeah, now I'm in the Spike Lee seat.
Yeah. And kids don't go outside anymore. Who's going to buy season tickets?
Right.
Why?
And the only thing I don't get right now is the smell of the players, but I get to hear them curse. I get to hear everything.
And what about the ability to then change your camera? I want courtside.
Exactly.
I want to be on top of the backboard.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I want to be behind the stage for that concert.
I want to be in the football cam, the one that travels above the field behind the play. Remember when it broke during the Patriots game and they had to, the whole game was behind, like, the Madden view?
Yes.
That was amazing.
That was like a foggy game. Was it a foggy game?
I think it was fog or
what
fireworks.
What if they put a VR cam right on LeBron's head? So you can
be why not? That would be anyway, I was just trying to say that I don't know, the stadiums as far as seating might get smaller because you don't need 60,000.
Yeah. So everybody's watching from home.
Yeah, and pretty soon it'll just be watching robots fight or watching kids play video games. There'll still be room for competition, but will people be watching baseball pretty soon? 160 games. 162. I don't know. I think it's going to be sooner than you think that it's going to be hard. Look at you watch a guy watch a lot of the Red Sox. Waiting for the booze to die down, and the where we travel around to play, the stadiums are empty. Nobody's going. Now the teams stink. That's true, but that's a big stadium to be a quarter full. That's not sustainable.
Yep.
No way.
Yeah, and the problem is that all these stadiums are being trashed and rebuilt because everyone keeps complaining that they're old.
Yeah.
And that's not the problem. The problem is that people just don't want to get out of their
house. It's the product, and I'm not even necessarily blaming the product necessarily, but times have changed.
Sure.
But it is also the product. Speaking of baseball, it takes no one's got 4 hours.
Unless they're gaming.
Yeah, then the 12.
Exactly. You know what? That's why no one's going to goddamn games.
It's a good point.
When my kids, how old are your kids, Brian?
14 and 12.
Okay, perfect. Do you think, do they care that much about sports on TV?
Not on TV, no.
Right. They don't. And do you think that's something that they'll learn later, or they're going to say, screw it, I'd rather watch Ninja play Fortnite.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. I cared a lot. At 11, I had Super Bowl shuffled,
I did too. Right.
And then Michael Jordan.
Because you may not have
that's, what we, that's not a good
sweetness.
Point. That's what we had.
Yeah.
Because my son was playing Fortnite and he was like, oh, my God, so-and-so was in my game today, because it's 100 players per game, right?
That's cool.
You see what I'm saying?
Right. No, but I'm saying that's cool. If one of your heroes, that'd be like meeting Michael Jordan.
Right.
So he's I totally get what you're saying.
I got shot by blah, 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 who's a famous Twitch character or whatever it is.
There's a Dark Souls griefer. I can't remember his name. He basically puts all this crazy armor on. And
to play the game?
Yeah.
Like in person?
And it's like all spikes. And then you show up and he just rolls
into
you.
He's like a Raiders fan.
And kills you. But people love it because he's, you know, famous. And I got killed by, I can't remember his name, Dark Lord or whatever. And I totally get it.
But don't you think that could be the next sport, right?
Oh, yes, I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, esports, all that.
Yeah.
Esports is huge. In fact, I didn't tell you this.
We've invested in an esport league?
No.
But you should.
I'm trying to get someone who'd be on the podcast. I met her at some party. She runs esport events.
Oh, awesome.
And so she's an older woman. So
that'll
they call
a good interview.
They call her like the esports mom because all of these are younger kids. And it's like in the early days, some of these kids were like 12.
Mm.
And their parents were just like, here you go. And he's like, shit, I got to take care of these kids. You know what I mean?
Well, the big sports league owners are, you know, sponsoring and buying their own esports league.
Right.
So that tells you all you need to know. They're yeah. leveraging their own bets to, okay, this either might be or will be huge and this won't be. I need to still be making money when whatever the sport is isn't what it used to be.
But even look at drone racing right now. You know what I mean? That's almost an esport. And he's look at it as like, whoa, that's more exciting than a car race. That
yeah.
is fast and crazy.
I didn't know they had drone racing.
Oh, you should
yeah.
just go on YouTube.
Yeah.
You should,
I haven't seen
They have these drones that they have these little VR headsets on
yeah.
to
yep.
race these drones through these obstacles. And they take these abandoned stadiums or whatever
yep.
there is. They put these light loops and they're racing these drones at ridiculous speeds through an op. Yeah.
That's
you know
cool.
how we were talking about trying to follow the hockey puck earlier?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you were talking
like,
about it.
This is even more amazing to try to follow each of these drones.
Well, it goes to what you said about your son, like the stuff he's building in Fortnite, like the dexterity and the speed, the way
yeah.
that his mind is working is
yeah.
above and beyond what anyone in this room can do.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
I,
the thing
I'm,
is, and
I
play with
my own Castlevania, but that's about it.
I play with him, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not even close to the speed that he is at shuffling things around and building things because we ever played Fortnite. Not that we need to really talk about it, but Fortnite really is about it's like Minecraft and like a first person like a you know first person shooter, not first person shooter, but like a game where you're killing other people, right? So you're chasing each other around. I call it more like laser tag.
A battle royale.
Battle royale. So, but you're building stuff at the same time. But he, on his controller, he's like building stuff real fast. Now, I'm not as fast as him, but I can help him with some strategy. So there's a little bit of wisdom behind my words. Like, hey, why don't we go over here? Let's try this. And he goes, he's reluctant. And he's like, oh, we should have done that. But at the same time, I'm getting shot by someone. And he's just like, built an entire castle around me in a matter of 5 seconds because he knows exactly what to do to protect me in the situation. You know what I mean?
It's one of the things I really liked about Fortnite over PUBG.
Yeah.
Was the PUBG's great, but I just felt like there was more depth and strategy. It's almost like a fighting game. Again, my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. I know there's factions on either side, but it's not just shooting. There's that whole other level of building and protecting.
Right.
While also still shooting. And I watched my first stream of it after it was already popular, after Drake.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, well, you know, what's going on here? After I'd met the Epic guys and said, didn't you just kind of go with what PUBG made? And they were like, no, you should watch it. And I said, fair enough. So then I watched it. And it is different and more my type of game as far as – it was almost like it was an endless ceiling to the how good you could get. You could be really good at shooting, sure. And there's a strategy to PUBG. But, man, there's so much going on that I honestly can't play with Fortnite. I saw it after everyone else did. I'm like, oh, I get it. This is a whole other level.
But it's also they've maintained for a while. Now, maybe it'll go by the way of Pokemon Go where no one's going to care anymore. But
we say that. They make a bunch of money. When you say no one cares,
but look at it's not in
the revenue that Pokemon Go is still making.
And okay. they're doing crazy new stuff built
yeah.
on that.
Yeah.
But
anyway.
But okay. But Pokemon Go, just like Fortnite, had to continue to give it something fresh.
Evolve,
constantly.
Evolve. Constantly,
yeah, their
right?
story stuff is amazing, like the big crack in the sky.
Did you see that?
Yeah, that's
like
really
my
cool
son
stuff.
Was so pissed off. He's like, I missed the crack, like the big event. What happened?
I feel like that's the thing that they're nailing
angle.
Better than anything is the changing story.
Because in 4 days, season 5 starts.
Oh, yeah, there's a countdown, right?
That's what's...
Season 5 starts, and you know that big crack in the sky is going to be some
That's what's
huge
the most
thing
amazing
part
And there's like
part
an anchor that appears.
The changing story.
Right.
Like, what's the anchor? Yeah, it's the meta game is really well done. Of course, it's also unfair. PUBG is a much smaller team, and Epic does a great job. It's not a battle of, you know, Goliath or anything like that, but they just have, you know, they're a bigger team.
So the talk of Battle Royale has made me thought of a really great, embarrassing story about Evan. Not that embarrassing.
Yeah. Oh, and we're out of time. Do I have that power?
1 year.
We did hit 1 hour, but I always go long.
I've been listening to you guys talk about gaming for the last 30 minutes. I'd like to hear the story, please.
So 1 year, we do our Neoscape company outing at the paintball arena.
Uh-huh.
Out in the woods.
This is apocryphal.
And we all get out there to the, you know, we park, we walk into the paintball arena, we sign up, sign the waivers that says, yeah, we know it's going to hurt. And you walk into the staging area, which is just kind of like a little wooden...
couple of picnic tables.
Yeah, basically a couple of picnic tables with some wood
planks
around. By
the bathrooms.
And we're all like strapping up, loading our ammunition into the guns, getting the goggles on and everything like that. And we're all standing around and we go, where's Evan? Where the hell's Evan? Where'd he go? Maybe he's in the bathroom. Like maybe he's in the can, or maybe he had to run back to the car to, you know, get something or whatever. And they're about to call, you know, start the next match. And they... right before they open up the doors, Evan comes in from the arena, shot to hell, with covered in paint, just blast,
like smoking,
just blasted in like paintballs. And we go, dude, what the hell were you doing? And he goes, I thought you guys were inside the arena. And then we go, wait a second, you went into the paintball arena without ammo? Yeah, I thought I was gonna find you guys. So that is the consummate team player, man. The team player who goes into the battle without ammo and is like, I'm worth the whatever
team.
Whatever
without a team, apparently.
Whatever it takes.
Get us worth the team. There was a guy on the ground next to me. We were huddling down by some tree stumps and they're whizzing overhead, you know, it was crazy. And he goes, why aren't you shooting? I'm like, I don't have any ammo. He goes, you're already out of ammo? I'm like, I don't have any ammo. And then they just kind of circled around me and lit me up. That was great.
Yeah. That day, they told us, in the so you do capture the flag from two sides, right?
Yeah.
And we were all on one side, and whatever team was on the other side. And they said, this side is never won, which they probably say before every match to get that side, you know, one side amped up. But we devised our strategy, which was Buzz was going to unload his, like, take off his gun, throw it to me, sprint as fast as he could, get the Nerf football, which is the flag, in the middle, and huck it back to our group so that we could protect the flag, which actually worked.
It worked like a charm.
He ran out there. He chucked it back. I've got his gun, so I'm, like, running around with two guns.
Like Rambo.
Totally getting shot up, pretty much as bad as Evan got shot up without ammo. But I saunter off the field like, oh, and then give a Buzz his gun like, oh, I tripped and fell. Here's the gun. But that team won. We won with our strategy of having him throw the Nerf ball back.
It's kind of like Ender's Game. Remember that when they
were yeah, yeah. I did not. Do you like the movie? Had you read the book?
I read the book.
Book was great.
The book was good. The movie was okay. Full disclosure, I was working at Digital Man when they were making the film.
Effects were good.
Yeah, the effects were good. Thank you. I don't know. There's something a little bit strange about the tone of the book.
If you delve too deeply into any of Orson Scott Card's great
work. Well, I understand
work.
His whole Mormon thing. There, right?
When I was younger reading it, I was just enjoying the story. Right. But then I reread it and I was like, oh, I see. It was kind of like reading, what's her name? Ayn Rand?
Mein Kampf?
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. I've only read that 10 times, but I'll get that other layer. But when I first
read's great the first time.
When I first tried to read, what's the name of that book? Fountainhead? Is that?
Fountainhead.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was like, yeah. But see, when I read her book, I thought, she's trying to, in my opinion. It was Atlas Shrugged. That's correct.
Yeah. Fountainhead's actually not so bad. It's the architect one. It's the Fountainhead. And Atlas Shrugged is a little more
heavy. Did you like one or the other or both?
Well, I like the architect one.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. Made sense. But.
Well, anyway. What's that, Brian?
Lair.
I was waiting for you guys to be over.
Oh, yeah, literature. I get it.
We're talking about controversial literature.
Wait, so what do you like? You don't like video games, books? What do you do?
Yeah,
you don't watch movies?
What's really funny is
great sales guy for news.
I was going to say that
he likes
old-fashioned
cartoons.
We think about this, though. We started talking about VR how we use VR with our client base in real estate.
Yep.
And then we went to video games. And then we tried to get back. You tried to pull the conversation back to, but how do you, you know, help your clients tell stories? And immediately went back to video games. And then we tried to pull the conversation back, and immediately goes back to video games.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to try to figure out what that, but I want to try to figure out what that's telling us.
Well, I'll tell you what it still is, because I'm one of the people that kept going back to video games, because there is something about video games that is an important part of the VR experience, right? And I think that that's what people there's an art there, and maybe it's because I've recently been talking a lot to a friend of mine who is one of the creatives at Naughty Dog, and he wrote Uncharted 4 and all those other things. He directed and wrote those things, so he is very much into the history of video games and how that narrative has happened and how that experience has happened. And it's only because companies like yours have really pushed the envelope about the VR experience of really trying to make that as good as possible. Where it's like, how do we get it even better? How do we get it even closer? And I think the next thing is not to look at things like movies or architecture walkthroughs.
I'm with you.
It's to look at video games.
I take a lot of direction.
Because it's first person. It's first person.
Yeah, I get inspired by that stuff.
Right. They know first person narrative. That's what they do every day. And they are dealing. By the way, that's why it takes 3 to 5 years to make a video game, because
they have 3,000 people.
Yeah, and they've got to figure out all the possible contingencies that a person can do to give them the right experience.
And how do you turn that into a, you know, I need something to tell a story in 10 weeks?
So I actually have.
That's what we struggle.
I understand.
Ryan, I have a question for Brian, like, because you get to see the front lines of this, right? Which is. I was going to say earlier, the thing that I always sort of get on my soapbox about is the scale, right? The idea of scale in VR is the one superpower you can't take away from it, because the one-to-one scale is something that you've wanted forever in design. Like, as an architect, that's why architects are embracing it, because they need to see the real space,
right?
But from a sales perspective, right, from somebody who is actually, you know, you get to see people who don't necessarily know how to interpret drawings the right way or know exactly what they're seeing in a rendering or what the finish is. They react to things. They feel things. Have you seen them have a more visceral response or like a better response to VR, or is it still – I don't know. How is that experience on the sales side?
And where I've seen it – successfully used with our clients, it's the close, right? So it's, to your point, it's actual putting someone in that space to understand kind of the scale. And maybe even, you know, one of our clients said, listen, we walk them through our brand, our story, the film, right? The really beautiful brochure that you guys put together, but there's still all the things, the tactical things they needed to see.
Yeah.
They need to understand the square footage, all the amenities, you know, why it's going to be
where does my sofa go?
A technically sound, you know, building that my CFO is going to be happy about. But you know what really got them was when we get someone hooked and we are able to put the goggles on, this was just Google Cardboard at the time, and show them the, you know, multi-height atrium that we're creating, that the rendering looked really cool, but once they're really able to see this space and understand it better, it's the close. They used it as the close, and they only used it when they had a client hooked, right? It was one of the things.
By the close, like, just to put it in perspective, is how you make the final sale.
You make a deal, yeah.
And in their mind, this was really what's going to put them over the edge. And so that's where I think we've seen it, you know, be successful, or something that puts them over the edge.
Because they're already primed for the experience.
Do you think that it can only, based on what your previous narrative was, where you take out the headset and people go, oh, no, I don't want to do that. Do you think that can only happen once you lead up to them and get them really excited and you're like, and here's the...
But I mean, it depends on the prospect, right?
Right. Exactly. So
I don't.
You don't?
Depends on the prospect. I just say no. I'm saying it depends on the prospect. I don't. I think you can start with that.
Right.
Yes.
If the experience is powerful enough, and if it's what they are drawn to. Oh, we have a headset. We get over here.
And if you got somebody that's already versed in or experienced, and they go, oh yeah, let me see that. Let me check it out.
Just take me there.
Right.
Right.
It depends on the product type too. So, you know, residential, you know, especially. If you're looking at, you know, an area that we typically, the market that our clients are in, you know, so their target market and their demographic is a younger, you know, millennial, and they're definitely more apt to be putting on a headset and understand the space, be comfortable with it. They don't have to watch someone first. They've done it before. They probably used, you know, a tool when they're gaming or whatnot, right? Mm-hmm. But when we work in the, you know, commercial real estate space, you know, they're the client that our client is selling to is a CFO, a CEO, you know, someone that is, hey, again, I need my employees to be comfortable here, but they're making decisions that are much different than someone that's buying or leasing a home, right?
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
We did a pretty cool experience where the company we were working with mocked up an airport, a piece of an airport, and a big empty floor. And at the end of the walking through how to get onto a plane, basically, and your luggage, there was a VR experience that we worked on with them. Mm-hmm. And so we were there watching everything as this big executive from this big airline came to look at it. And we get to the VR experience, and I'm not putting that on. Oh, but no, it's quick. You can just see the scale of what you just saw. They only built a piece of it. Mm-hmm. Would not put it on. So to the point of the audience, you can do all this. You'd like to think great work, but in the end, they needed to also have the mock-up and other tools because the VR was, I'm not looking at that, which was just a great disappointment. Again, a lot of great work was done that still helped and, you know, everything worked out. But to just see to Brian's point earlier of, I'm not putting that on, it's like, give it a shot. And they wouldn't even give it a shot. So you can do all this great stuff. And then depends on the audience.
I think those days, you know, obviously, right? It's demographic. I mean, sure. As soon as other people started getting into those roles that
there's a demographic, but there's also literally just like there's a shortcoming there, right? People may have had bad experiences. I know that I've had bad VR experiences right. where I've gotten nauseated, and the recovery from that can be hours.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Right? And so that's traumatic. So cyber sickness is a real deal, real problem, and you know. Even if you can guarantee them that they're not going to get sick because you have a good 6 degrees of freedom experience, it's kind of hard for them to convince that. I mean, I know, you know, I've been in meetings with Vlado where they've shown stuff to Vlado and Vlado goes, oh, I still feel sick.
Well, yeah, man, imagine this, the executive experience of I might be sick for 4 hours and I still have the rest of my day
right.
to talk to you about this. Yeah. I can't risk
it. It's not worth it.
Right? It's not worth it. You're exactly right.
Or, I mean, it could be simple. As like, I don't want to look like an idiot, right? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've actually been to several VR, you know, talks and stuff like that. And one is obviously cyber sickness is one thing. And then you've got cyber face, where you have the big goggle face around your face, right?
You know, I deal with that every day. It's not stopped me.
Yeah. Cyber hair, again, you don't have to deal with that either. No. Right, because there's just putting a head.
That's a real bitch.
Yeah, I know. None of us have hair.
When you get like cyber crease, the headset in the back of your head.
So yeah, all these things, you know, and tripping and things, bumping into walls.
But every day the technology gets better. The new, the new Vive is awesome. Mm-hmm. The Vive Focus? That thing is great.
The free range one.
Yeah, with the 6 degrees, it's all inclusive, like the HoloLens, but
you know, inside out.
Inside out tracking. And then the Oculus Go has changed everything too. Before, we'd have to tell our clients you need a $400 unlocked phone.
It's really comfortable.
And a $150 headset. And then also it's going to be a pain in the ass to use because of updates and things like that and carriers and no SIM cards. The Go is awesome.
Yep.
And our clients are very much receptive to the price point and the quality. And so, like you said, so easy.
I don't understand why the Go wasn't the first thing, why it had to be the Gear.
I don't think
like why
display technology and the tech was there, frankly.
So well, we just had to put in the cell phone.
Well, they had that. Yeah, there's a lot of technology inside of phones that was possible, right? Yeah. Now, to keep in mind, this was John Carmack, right? So I don't remember if the Gear VR came out first or the Cardboard came out first, but I want to say that the Gear VR came out.
Boy, I would think – I don't know either, but I'll just for fun, I'll say it's Cardboard. We can bet later on.
But they basically – Carmack joined Oculus because he got interested in this and goes, there's enough technology in here. But his point was like, let's make it better than the Cardboard, right, where the tracking was a little bit better, the headsets were a little bit better. And the Cardboard was pretty It started off almost as a joke, right?
Yeah, at the time. That's it did, exactly it right. Yeah. But the tracking and the stability of the Gear VR was, we talked about motion sickness.
Right.
People still can get sick, don't get me wrong, but the Gear VR was light years ahead of what the cardboard could do.
Yeah, it was way
just
better.
The phone.
Yep. Right.
And they built the tech. They had an extra little sensor in there.
Now you get the Daydream, which is, you know, about as good as a Gear VR, if not better. But you still need a phone. Right.
But, yeah. I mean, that's the problem, right? The problem is you need something else and then you need to update that.
How about this? I'm getting one of these for my dad. My dad's an older fellow. I know I look like a young 25, but I'm older than that. And he's going to love this thing. I would never have gotten him a Gear VR and a phone and all this other setup. It'd be too much. But this is, he's got an iPhone. You know, just pick your app that you want to buy. It shows up on the device. Put it on. You're good to go. And, of course, they have the controllers now, too, which really helps.
Yeah.
Right. You were showing me your uncle.
Yeah, 81 years old.
Playing fishing.
Yep. Doesn't have an email account. Has a flip cell phone. And I just 2 weeks ago was down in Virginia and put the headset on and I had him, you know, bass fishing. And he absolutely loved it. So, it's definitely come along.
Yeah. And I saw people like that with the Gear VR, too. So it's not like.
Sure.
But it's just a better experience.
When we were in Boston a couple of years ago for. When Carlos hosted the ASAI, the American Society of Architecture Illustrators Conference, Steve Oles was there. And Steve Oles is one of the founders of ASAI. And he is just, I think he was just 80 years old at that time. So here's a guy who isn't spent his entire life illustrating architecture for the world's best, right? Like he's the guy who drew by hand the, you know, the pyramid at the Louvre, which we... you know, all know, and it's the first time that he experienced VR and to see a space in stereoscopic, you know, 3D at 1-to-1 scale.
Yeah, scale.
And just to be there, to see him put the headset on and like, what do you think, Steve? And he goes, holy fuck. it was cool. Amazing.
We had a client take off our headset one time, remember, and he said, that was fucking cool. It's like, that's what you want to hear. Can we quote you on that? He's like, absolutely. I'm like, outstanding. It's good to hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about you the other day, Ev, because I through my newsfeed, something came across where it was, it's kind of Matterport-esque, right? This idea where you could basically capture reality of any huge space very easily. I think it was drone-based, too. And I thought back to that project when you and I worked on St. Mark's, which was this like huge private school that covers acres. It's an old Tudor style buildings and lots of ins and outs. And we went out there for what felt like, you know, months. It was probably weeks, but felt like, you know, months where we were photographing every nook and cranny and face and a tree and so on to reproject this thing onto 3D geometry. And now basically in a day, you could take a drone, have a full 3D model that has fully textured and be like, there you go. That's the thing.
I saw the same thing. I think it was Microsoft and with, as you said, drones and stitching it all together. And it was like, man, that was a lot harder for us.
Think of the artery, right? So we're back to what are the first projects that artery project was.
Quick, funny story. We do the artery. We had weeks and months spent photographing the entire artery on both sides for the building.
So let's explain. Let me explain what the artery is for people that don't. So some people describe it as the eighth wonder of the world. In Boston, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, there was a project that was started to reclaim a swath through the center of the city that used to have an elevated highway, and they moved that highway underground and built a series of elaborate tunnels.
They call it
the big dig.
The big dig,
So the artery
was a nicer way, if it's really nicer, because I'm not sure it's a better than the big dig. Go.
I like the big dig. And so we photographed all these buildings, and we very much spent a lot of time texturing these buildings and straightening out, cloning windows, and it was a nightmare. But it turned out great. At the end, I had I was feeling really good about myself. Like, look at all this work we did, and Google's out there putting buildings in 3D. Let me email Google. Hey, Google, we got this 3D model. Let's talk. Maybe you guys can make use of this.
You might want some of what we're cooking.
In your mapping software, and they never responded. And then, I don't know, maybe 6 months later, they debut this auto photogrammetry.
Google Earth of the cars Google driving Earth around. Auto, yeah.
And it's all done. I'm like, what the fuck? We spent all this time? And Google's already like, yeah, we got this figured out.
But ours has
yeah.
topology.
For every city yeah. in the world, you, by the way. Yeah,
exactly. exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's why they bought SketchUp and sold SketchUp, because like, we don't need it anymore. We'll yeah. just do it all yeah. photogrammetry.
It's unbelievable what they're doing now.
Yeah.
Including, well, you guys, we all use Google Earth and their right. their tech. I keep looking at my house. I'm just in a little yeah, town. Yeah,
there was our roof was damaged from a windstorm, and the little part was flipped up. So it's like, it's not for a long period of time, for maybe like 2 weeks.
Yeah,
and
crazy.
And I was like, oh, that's when they took the photograph of our house. That was about 6 months ago.
Amazing technology.
All right. Well, we're getting towards the. We are at the end. Anything? Do you guys want to? Any special announcements? Anything? Nothing. Other good stories about
I have
Lon?
Teases of announcements.
Okay.
I'm turning 40. No, that's not it. We have something in the works coming up. Carlos and others will be announcing something pretty soon that's going to be really cool.
Okay.
For Neoscape.
Carlos is the visualization director.
Correct. Thank you. I'm talking to you guys. I know that there's yeah. other people listening. So that's going to be something pretty cool. And I would think there'd be something around SIGGRAPH to talk about.
Okay.
For that. And that is not quite the big market tease you're looking for, but it's we're pretty excited about it.
Okay.
We'll follow up. We'll let people know.
We'll follow up. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's cool. Any other good stories about Lon, since he shared stories about you paintball? You want to put this one on the podcast?
Lon has oh, wait. Okay. So, all right. This is a public record. Let me change my story.
Public record.
Lon has the ability to ruin every new car I get. So I got a new car. Hey, Lon, this is years ago. Let me pick you up. Let's drive around in my new car. He's like, absolutely. Let's do it. So I pick him up. He gets in. He's like, let me just put my coffee down here on the floorboard, which is where you put a new, you know, hot coffee. And I immediately am driving. I don't know. And the whole thing falls over. And it was like a tan car, coffee everywhere. So we laughed about it. And I steamed inside. And then 3 years later, my lease is up.
Steamed inside and then steamed the carpet.
And I get another leased car. Hey, Lon, let's not do the coffee thing again. Oh, that won't. Oh, there goes the coffee. Day two of the car.
Did you really?
He did it again.
So absolutely the same thing happened.
Oh, you mean the time I did this and then he drops the coffee?
I am so lucky.
Yeah, so I haven't brought coffee into Chris's, Chris's Tesla.
If you're, this is not comedians in cars with coffee. Do not let Lon in the car with a beverage.
Any beverage.
For the record, the first time it spilled, Evan hit a bump.
Of course.
You left it on the floorboard. Did it have cup holders?
No, of course it had like 11.
It was a new car. Look at his glide. He drives like Mr. Magoo. I can understand how that happened.
And just a shout out to Start Trouble.
Yeah.
Don't travel in a car with Eric Altman from Steel Blue and Sour Cream. And you guys can ask him what that's all about.
Okay.
Awesome. We're going to have to get Eric
to defend himself. He's been on this podcast.
I know. Well, and Lon was there for that. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
We were talking about a San Francisco trip.
Yes.
So
we can go back. It's like, so
ask
tell
him
us
about that.
Tell
yeah,
us about
the
sour cream.
Put him on the spot.
Tell us about the sour cream, Eric. What about the sour cream?
But we won't let him know. Because he's probably not going to listen to this podcast.
He's a few behind.
We won't let him know until we're in the, like, three quarters of the way through.
Yeah.
And then we'll drop it on him.
Let's see how he handles it.
See how it goes.
Yep. Witness protection. Might want to change his voice.
Yeah. It was had another had another one what I did with Steve Blakey. And apparently there's something that happened at SIGGRAPH 1993 with him and Scott Ross. And
no one will tell the story.
No one will tell the story. And I said, so what's the story, Steve? And goes, oh, I can't say that on the podcast. And so I can say it because it's like an NDA that I haven't signed. Right?
Yeah,
so
right,
I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, because so you don't know the story.
I don't know the story, so I have no idea. And so I told Scott, I said, hey, Scott, Steve Blakey was on the podcast. He goes, did he tell you the story? I said, no. He goes, oh, okay, good. <It's> like,
oh,
like,
okay,
I
don't
know what the story is.
Should have said yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I should have said yes. It's like
crazy story. I can't believe it. I didn't get all the details. Yeah.
And that thing that Ed did. And,
right.
And then
with the fish and you're like, and then it all comes out.
Oh, well, yeah. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. Do that with Altman with this sour cream.
Yeah, I can't believe what you did with the sour cream.
In the back of a Volkswagen Jetta. Just saying. All right, it was my mom's car.
I was going to say, was it Jetta he spilled the coffee in? And you're worried about that? What's going on?
It was new, man.
It was new.
Brand new?
French roast after that.
French roast.
Is that new car smell? It's French roast. French roast.
Smells like a Starbucks.
Boursin cheese and...
All right. Well, that's a good place to end it. And I really appreciate you guys coming down.
Thanks for having us out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this has been great. We've been listening to you guys, you know, for a long time.
And, oh, cool. Thank you.
It's a great podcast. I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you coming down. I've been wanting to do one with you guys for a while. We were just waiting for the opportunity to see you guys in person. So this is perfect.
Thank you so much.
Anytime you guys are on the West Coast, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Sounds good.
We're here.
Good.
See ya.
Thanks, guys.